We'll be continuing our study of the Minor Prophets, so if you want to grab a Bible and turn to the book of Amos, that's the next one in the order. The book of Amos, it's a prophecy, and it foretells the destruction of Israel and Judah's neighbors, and then it foretells the destruction of Judah, and then the destruction of Israel. And this evening we'll be looking at the first chapter and the first few verses of chapter 2, and that being the destruction of all the surrounding countries, all of Israel and Judah's neighbors. So in Amos chapter 1, we'll read the first two verses. The words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. And he said, the Lord will roar from Zion, and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. So Amos, which is the writer of this book, it's thought that he was a poor man. There's a more detail we'll go into when we get to chapter number 7, but it's thought that he was a poor man. It says that he was a herdman of the Tekoa. So he lived in a town south of Bethlehem. And then at the end of verse 1, it says this was written or foreseen 2 years before the earthquake. And this earthquake was an important mark on the timeline for them. If you look in the book of Zechariah, we see it briefly mentioned. In Zechariah 14th chapter in verse 5, it says, and ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. Yea, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee. So again, the earthquake was a very important part of history for them, and so that's why it's mentioned in the second verse. Uzziah was king at the time of this earthquake. In the writings of Josephus, who you may have heard mentioned before, he was a historian, and a lot of people put a lot of respect into his works. But in some of the writings of Josephus, he says, in the meantime, a great earthquake shook the ground and a rent was made in the temple. And the bright rays of the sun shone through it and fell upon the king's face, insomuch that leprosy seized upon him immediately. And before the city, at a place called Erog, half the mountain broke off from the rest of the west and rolled itself 4 furlongs and stood still at the east mountain, till the roads, as well as the king's gardens, were spoiled by the obstruction. So this earthquake was obviously a big deal. It tore up these palaces for Uzziah, and it was just a large natural disaster that took place. And so it was a landmark on their timeline. Verse 2, it tells us that the voice of the Lord, it says it will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. This is important because that is where people were supposed to be worshiping God, was Jerusalem at this time. And so that's why the voice is going to be coming from there, is because that's where God was at the moment. That's where they were supposed to be worshiping God. But the worship of other gods had been installed in Bethel and Samaria and other places like that. And then he says at the end of verse 2, and the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. So God, as we know throughout the entire Bible, he uses nature to display his power, whether it's the flooding of the earth or causing natural disasters to take place or causing plagues to fall upon large groups of people. He always uses nature. So again, he says it's going to be this great thing is going to happen, and you're going to see it, and nature is going to help me show my power. And Mount Carmel is mentioned because it means the orchard or fertile land. This is a place that was always green, even during droughts. They could rely on this place for water or for places to graze their livestock and things like that. And so he's saying, even this is going to wither. I'm going to tear up the land. This is what's coming for you. Then the next couple verses in Amos, verses 3 through 5. It says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Damascus, and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have threshed Gilead with threshing instruments of iron. But I will send a fire into the house of Hazael, which shall devour the palaces of Ben-Hadad. I will break also the bar of Damascus and cut off the inhabitants from the plain of Avon, and him that holdeth the scepter from the house of Eden, and the people of Syria shall go into captivity under Kir, saith the Lord." So this phrase, "for three transgressions of Damascus and for four I will not turn away thereof," this is a phrase that's going to be mentioned quite a few times throughout this chapter. The NET says, "because Damascus has committed three crimes," make that four, then it has an exclamation mark. So the way it's written, what he's saying, you know, they did three things wrong. Actually, they did four things wrong because of all these things they did wrong. That's the main point, that all these nations that we're going to be talking about did a lot of things wrong. And so this phrase is going to be commonly used throughout the study. But because Damascus had committed these crimes, they're going to be destroyed. Damascus was a prominent city in Syria, and so Damascus represents the entire nation of Syria. And that's also a common theme throughout this book. When it says a certain city, it's going to be representing the entire nation that city lies in. And Damascus and or Syria was known for their border disputes with Israel. In this specific incident that it's talking about, it says, "because they have threshed Gilead with threshing instruments of iron, it happened during a war between Syria and Israel on land east of the Jordan during the reign of Jehu." And I found a quote talking about this incident. It says, "they even crushed the prisoners to pieces with iron threshing machines, according to a barbarous war custom that is met with elsewhere." So this is the punishment that Amos talks about, that Syria, when they captured some of the Israelites, they brutally killed them. And I have here on the screen a map. And so you can see all the different nations that we'll be talking about this evening. We have Israel's in the green, and then Judah's below them. And then Damascus, we can see up at the very top, it's the black little dot, and it's part of the nation of Syria. So that's who it's talking about currently. Verse 4 says, "but I will send a fire into the house of Hazael, which shall devour the palaces of Ben-Hadad." So Hazael at this time, it was the founder of the Syrian dynasty, and Ben-Hadad was the royal family name. So Hazael was the guy that kind of started it all, and then the Ben-Hadad was the current reigning family. And so when he says he's going to destroy this place and this family, he's saying this power, this great thing that you have in your nation, I'm going to destroy it. He's saying, you know, I'm going to destroy your founding fathers and your current president, pretty much. Verse 5, this is a common phrase throughout this chapter also. It says, "I will break also the bar of Damascus and cut off the inhabitants from the plain of Avon." It says, "break off the bar." This is representing in ancient times, they would have two giant doors to the city gates, and then they would have a bar that folds down between them to keep those gates shut. And so when that bar is broken, well, the gates are wide open, and they're ripe for the taking. So he's saying, I'm going to break the bar figuratively. I'm going to allow people to come in and destroy you. The Plain of Avon was a place that was specifically known for their idol worship. It's a place that they would all go to worship their false gods. And he says, I'm going to cut off the inhabitants of the plain. I'm going to kill all these people. And then it mentions, "and him that holdeth the scepter from the house of Eden." Eden was a royal city. It wasn't a capital, but it was a royal city. And a lot of the power came from that city. And so when he says he's going to get rid of the scepter, he's going to get rid of, again, that power that is existing and helping to run Syria. And later, you can read, and I believe it's in Kings, the Assyrian army would kick the Syrians out of their land and move them to Kir, which is near the Caspian Sea. I don't remember if Kir is on this map or not, but you can read about that in other books. Now in Amos chapter 1, verses 6 through 8, it moves on to the next nation. It says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Gaza, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof." So again, he uses the same phrase. He says, because of all these things you did, I'm not going to not be mad at you. He says, "Because they carried away captive the whole captivity to deliver them up to Edom. But I will send a fire on the wall of Gaza, which shall devour the palaces thereof. And I will cut off the inhabitant from Ashdod, and him that holdeth the scepter from Ashkelon. And I will turn mine hand against Ekron, and the remnant of Philistines shall perish, saith the Lord God." So here we see that God is mad at Gaza. Gaza, remember we talked about, if it says a city, it represents that whole nation. So Gaza is representing Philistia, which we see on the bottom left, the purple nation along the Mediterranean Sea. And they had, at one point, sold the Israelites to the Edomites. And Edom is on the bottom right, the orange nation. And I don't know if it's been a couple years at least, but we went through the book of Obadiah. Obadiah is foretelling the destruction of Edom and all their wickedness and evil things that they had done to the Israelites and then also just to the surrounding nations. And Gaza, specifically, was known for their iron chariots and strong fortifications. They had these giant walls that when invading groups later took over the nation, they tried hard to keep those walls in shape, keep those fortifications, because they were built so good. And Gaza, which is English, comes from the Hebrew word Aza, which means strong or fortified. So their name was strong, was fortified. They were known for their defenses. So that's why it's such an important thing when it talks about in verse 7, "I will send a fire on the wall of Gaza and shall devour the palaces thereof." Then in verse 8, it mentions a few different places. Ashdod and Ashkelon, those were city-states. Ekron was the capital. And once again, he says, you know, these important places, the capital, the palaces, I'm going to destroy it all. All this authority and power you had, it's going to be gone pretty soon. Then in Amos chapter 1, verses 9 through 10, it moves on to the next place. And this time it's not actually a country, but it's a Phoenician city-state. Amos 1, verses 9 through 10 says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Tyrus, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they delivered up the whole captivity of Edom, and remember not the brotherly covenant. But I will send a fire on the wall of Tyrus, which shall devour the palaces thereof." So if you see at the very, very top to the left of Syria, there's a little black dot on the Mediterranean Sea that says Tyrus. And I did some research, and I'm sure with a little more research I could figure it out, but Tyrus was a Phoenician city-state, as I said. And I haven't quite understood what a city-state is. It's almost as if it's one city, and that one city is its own nation. That's the best way I could understand it. They don't have all the territory like all the other countries did, but this one country is also its one city. But Tyrus was a very, very powerful place. Tyrus is in trouble because at one point, as it mentions here, they were friends with the Israelites, but then they captured and sold them into slavery to Edom. And if you go to the book of Joel, which we finished studying up last time, Joel chapter 3, in verse 4 and 6, it says, "Yea, and what have you to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coast of Palestine? Will you render me a recompense? And if you recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head?" Then verse 6, it says, "The children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them from far from their border." So we see here they were at one time friends with the Israelites, and then when they saw it was in their best interest to betray them, they sold them into captivity. And that's the story with a lot of the surrounding nations. They were friends with Israel or Judah until it benefited them to betray them. And then verse 10, again, it's the same concept. It says, but I will send fire on the wall of Tyrus, which shall devour the palaces thereof. Their fortresses were going to be destroyed. I don't know if there's an account of it in the Bible, but in history in general, there's an account of Tyrus being destroyed. Nebuchadnezzar turned Tyrus into a vassal state, which would be they still kept all their people and their leadership, but they were then below Nebuchadnezzar. And that took place in 573 BC. And then later on in 332 BC, Alexander the Great would come in and just completely destroy them. He would destroy the town and the people he left alive. He would keep them for slaves or sell them as slaves. So later on, Tyrus would be completely wiped off the face of the map. Next, in Amos 1, 11 and 12, again, moving on to the next place, it says, thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Edom, and for four I will turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword, and he cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. So Edom, as I mentioned before, the book of Obadiah talks about, Edom constantly caused trouble for the Israelites. And the Israelites, as you remember, and Judah, they're descendants from Jacob. Edomites, they were descendants from Esau. So that rift between the brothers continued down to between these two nations. The Edomites were always trying to invade and take land, capturing Israelites, selling them into slavery. Again, if they could get the upper hand, they would promptly take it. Then in verse 12, it mentions some towns. It says Teman, which was the capital of Edom. And Edom on the map is in the bottom right. It's the orange nation. Teman was the capital of Edom. And then Bozraz was also, it wasn't a capital, but it was a very important city where there would have been idols that everybody would go worship and lots of trading would take place. So again, the capital, all this authority that this nation knows is going to be destroyed. It says, I will send fire upon Teman and shall devour the places of Bozrah. Verses 13 and 15 of Amos chapter 1 says, thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of the children of Ammon, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have ripped up the women with child of Gilead, that they might enlarge their border. But I will kindle a fire in the wall of Reba, and it shall devour the palaces thereof, with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind. And their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith the Lord. So as far as I know, nobody knows exactly what took place when it's talking in verse 13. It says, because they have ripped up the women with the child of Gilead, they might enlarge their border. It was very common, especially for Ammon, which is the yellow nation on the right-hand side. It's very common for them to have border disputes with Israel. That was kind of their common thing. They always wanted more land, always, you know, trying to move the property line in on them. But again, we don't know exactly what the Ammonites did to Israel, but obviously it's not good. God was not pleased with them. And as a side note, the nation of Ammon is descendants from Lot's relationship with his daughter. They are direct descendants from that relationship. Verse 14, it mentions the wall of Rabbah. And these were very massive walls. This is a quote I found from an archaeologist, and I forgot to put the guy's name, but he says, and this is concerning the walls of Rabbah, the massive walls, some of which remain in ruins, rise from the precipitous sides of the cliff. I bent over them and looked sheer down and about 300 feet into one wadi, which is just a ravine, and 400 feet into the other. I did not wonder at its having occurred to King David that the leader of a charge against these ramparts would have met with certain death, consequently assigning the position of Uriah. So you're saying these massive walls, there were these valleys or ravines on either side, and it makes sense that nobody could get in there. It'd be so impossible for anybody to attack them. So again, you know, this giant fortification that these people relied upon, God says, or Amos says, that I will kindle a fire in the wall of Reba, and he was going to destroy it. In verse 15 it says, and their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith the Lord. The King James Version says king. Other versions say Malcolm or Milcom, which was the god of the Ammonites. So it's not just their leader, but their god, the thing or person that they worshiped, that they relied upon, that they based their whole lifestyle around. That's who was going to be taken into captivity. You know, it would be very demoralizing for a nation to have their president or dictator or ruler taken into captivity, because that's a sign of weakness. Think of how more disappointing it would be if your god was taken into captivity by another god. So that's what he's saying is going to take place. And this god, Malcolm or Milcom, tradition was that he called for sacrifices of living children to be thrown into fire. So again, you know, all these nations we're talking about, whether it was Edom and Ammon especially, they were not sophisticated or civilized civilizations, you might say. They weren't nice and just had little disputes with the neighbors. They were very corrupt, evil people who worshiped false gods and in doing so committed terrible atrocities. Then the last one we'll look at is in the first three verses of chapter 2. Amos chapter 2 and verse 1 says, "Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he burned the bones of the king of Edom into lime. But I will send a fire upon Moab, and it shall devour the palaces of Kirioth, and Moab shall die with tumult, with shouting, and with the sound of the trumpet. And I will cut off the judge from the midst thereof, and I will slay all the princes thereof with him, saith the Lord." So Moab, the purple nation on the lower right-hand side, again, he uses the same phrase, these three things, say four, you have committed. And Moab, or the Moabites, it's the same group of people. Sorry, my page got cut short. So there was a man by the name of Saint Jerome. He's not as well known as Josephus and other people, but he was a theologian and scholar and historian. And he wrote that after this war, referring to the war of the Moabites between the Moabites and Edom, he says that after this war, the Moabites, in revenge for the assistance which the king of Edom had given to Israel, dug up and dishonored his bones. And other accounts go into more detail of talking about them digging up not only the bones of the king, but of the rest of the army and burning them for a long time so that they turned into lime. And I was thinking about this, and you know, it's one thing to... We all understand that when somebody dies, they are no longer in their body. They have left. But you know, we still have a funeral. We still honor that body. That person in the casket is dressed up. We give them flowers and things like that. There's still an amount of honor that comes with a person's body. And so to dishonor that, not only to dishonor a person when they're alive, but also to dishonor them when they're dead is just another form of cruelty or evil, however you want to put it, it destroys, you know, the dead's dignity. But this is what the Lord was so mad at Moab over, that not only had they betrayed Israel over time, but also when they had fought with the Edomites, they had destroyed, I guess you might say, the sanctity of life. In verse 2, again, he says, "He will send fire upon Moab, shall devour the palaces of Kirioth." And so Kirioth was the chief city, similar to a capital, and it was the sanctuary for their god Chemosh. And so again, it's where everyone would go to worship, where all the temples and the sacrifices and things of that nature would take place. Then in the verse 2, it says, "And Moab shall die with tumult, with shouting, and with the sound of the trumpet." So tumult, that means uproar, pretty much. The NET says war cries. And so this destruction, all these destructions aren't going to be peaceful. It's not like all these nations will go to sleep one night and nobody will wake up the next morning. These nations were all going to be invaded by other nations. The people would either be killed or sold into slavery or kept for slaves themselves. In Jeremiah 48, it talks about the destruction of Moab. And we won't read the whole chapter, but that's what the whole chapter is about. But within that chapter, I took out some phrases referring to what's going to happen to Moab. He says, no more praise of Moab. Moab will be cut down. No city shall escape. The valley also shall perish, and the plain shall be destroyed. So again, you know, in this time period, when a nation invaded and beat another nation, they didn't just say, oh, we win and walk out. Again, they killed or sold everyone into slavery. They would steal all the possessions, and what they couldn't steal, they would burn down to the ground. In some battles, they would, on all their farmland, they would scatter salt so that people couldn't grow anything, even if somebody did try to come back. It's in some ways a lot different than it is today. But again, all these destructions wouldn't be peaceful, wouldn't be pleasant for anyone. And then in verse 3, it says, and I will cut off the judge from the midst thereof. I will slay all the princes. So slaying all the princes, again, getting rid of all that authority. Judge, in some other translations, it says chief magistrate or ruler. And again, this is just another member of authority, somebody they would hold high up. They would make a lot of important decisions for them. So that's where we'll stop for this evening. Next time we'll look at the destruction of Judah, or the judgment on Judah, I guess you might say, and on Israel, and talk about, again, why Israel's in trouble and what they messed up, and go through all that. But as you go throughout the minor prophets, it's a reminder that you'll pay for your deeds, whether they're good or bad. You know, a lot of these nations, or all these nations, they messed with God's people, and they had to pay for that. But being a member of God's people, it's also comforting that evil will be taken care of in the end. You know, the Israelites, some of them were still sold into slavery. They weren't, everything wasn't fixed for them right away. But in the end, the people who did evil things to God's people had to pay for those. So we need to make sure that we're on the right side, which is with God, and understand that even if it doesn't work out for us on this earth, that in the long run, it'll be well worth it. As always, we offer an invitation song. If there's someone who needs the prayers of the church or would like to be baptized this evening, if you come forward while we stand and while we sing.